The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Corey Lewandowski, best-selling author. First book, Let Trump Be Trump. Second book, New York Times bestseller, Hot as a Pepper. Hot as a Pepper. Must read, absolutely. Trump's Enemies, you can get on Amazon, or you can just go to our website. That's the easiest thing. Just go to johnfredericks.com. There's an icon for it there. Click on it, buy it, B. Dalton, whatever you want. You're good to go. And he also is a senior contributor now with Fox News, and Corey Lewandowski, also the senior advisor to the Great America Committee, that is Vice President Mike Pence's hard money pack. More information, go to greatamericacommittee.com. And he's with us now. Corey Lewandowski, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, John, and more importantly, happy anniversary.
Thank you, Corey. I really appreciate it. And also want to tell everybody that Corey and I's friendship goes back to the AFP days, AFP, the Americans for Prosperity. One of my first sponsors ever 8 years ago when I started. Corey was there and has been a big supporter of ours. And Corey, your personal friendship to me over this long period of time, one of the things that I cherish in my life. Thank you.
Well, John, thank you. And look, your listeners don't understand fully the impact that you've had, not just in Virginia, but well beyond that. The first radio host in the country to call the Trump victory very early on. You were there when everybody else said that his campaign was a farce. You called it. You were part of the campaign as the chairman in Virginia and all the work that you did to propel Trump to victory. And now even beyond that, John, talking about the success of this administration has not been forgotten. So thank you.
Corey Lewandowski, thanks for everything, man. And it's been a wild ride for the from the first day. I remember when you went there and I called you up in January of 2015. And I'm like, I heard you with the Trump Organization. Is he running for president? And you said, yes. And I said, I'm in. Where do I sign? So it's been some ride. Corey, now we get into 2019. I want to talk about a lot of things today. Rapid fire. Let's talk about the first and the economy. You would have thought on Christmas Eve it was economic Armageddon, right? The stock market was crashing. The Trump economy was done. The entire legacy media had said we were in for disaster. We go to Christmas. The following day it opens up. You have a 1,000-point gain over 2 days and crickets from the legacy media. How long is this nonsense going to continue?
Well, John, it's going to continue forever because when things go well, Trump doesn't get the credit. When things go badly, they blame him. And, you know, you probably read in the Hill newspaper just this week this story how Donald Trump won't make it through 2019. It was an op-ed by a former Republican congressman, how Trump isn't going to make it through 2019, how Armageddon is coming, how, you know, there's no successes of this administration. These are the haters. And you know what it is? The American people are so smart. They're so tired of this. You know, we saw it once again this week with the media, the mainstream media, John, was criticizing Melania Trump for her footwear in a war zone, right? They don't want to mention the fact that she's the first lady in more than a decade to actually go to a war zone, which means Michelle Obama never went there. And they don't want to criticize Michelle Obama for wearing $4,000 boots on her book tour, but they want to criticize Melania Trump. And so, look, the American people have seen it now. They know there's more money in their pocket today than there was when Donald Trump was elected 2 years ago. They know the economy is better. They know that he's fighting for jobs and renegotiating bad trade deals so that we, as Americans, can be first as opposed to somebody else. But the media hates that narrative. They hate this president more than they love their country. And that's partially why he was so successful in the election 2 years ago, because the American people are fighting back against that fake news narrative.
He's going to win again. Corey. I have no doubt. Let's get to Mueller investigation. When does this thing end to get wrapped up?
Honestly, nobody knows. And that's a problem. And the problem for that is that he has an unlimited checkbook, unlimited time. And what I am hopeful for, but I don't know if it will happen, is the new attorney general, after he is sworn in, this Mr. Barr, is going to come in and hopefully reevaluate everything that the Mueller team has been doing and make a determination if there is any reason to continue this investigation. Bob Mueller has now been investigating the potential of collusion or cooperation with a foreign entity for almost 2 years and has found zero evidence. So at what point does he stop doing that and end his investigation and make it public to the American people? It is something the American people deserve to see, and it's something that's long overdue. But there is no time frame, and that's a problem.
No time frame, no report, no end in sight. So does this just go on?
No accountability, John.
No accountability.
The biggest thing is no accountability.
So does this just go on through 2020? Because as long as it goes on, the Democrats can keep saying, well, where there's smoke, there's fire. We have to protect the investigation, et cetera. I mean, at some point, don't you have an end game here? You, whatever findings you have, you send it in, you let the chips fall where they may, right?
You would hope so. But look, there has been no accountability, so I don't know if they're going to come up with any resolution here. And this is a problem, right? We've got individuals who aren't reporting to anybody. Rod Rosenstein has messed up this investigation beyond words and has had no accountability for Mueller, has given him a blank check. We spent tens of millions of dollars on this witch hunt. And the real collusion should have been between the Clinton campaign, which we know existed, and outside sources. But there's been no investigation into that. So when does this investigation into the Trump campaign winning by a huge margin come to an end? Mm-hmm. When does that happen? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is actually a gross abuse of taxpayer dollars.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, it's got to get wrapped up. I think I just saw a Rasmussen poll the other day, an overwhelming majority, like 59%, 60% of Americans just want it done. And whatever happened, happened. Let's just see what it is. I think the country wants to move on from it because so far they've produced no evidence about any collusion at all. Let's get to government shutdown, wall negotiation. Nancy Pelosi taking power tomorrow, saying that there'll be no money for the wall. She's introducing a new bill that has no money for the wall to keep the government reopened. The president asking for a deal and negotiation. Corey, what happens?
Well, look, this has been the hallmark of the Trump campaign, which is getting the wall done. And I think anything shy of getting that done is going to be a failure. And if the president can't get the money in this budget with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, then I and many others have encouraged him to use every resource possible at his disposal, including the military, to go build this wall to protect Americans from all enemies, both foreign and domestic. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what happened over the Christmas holiday with a police officer being killed by an illegal alien, there is nobody in America who should be talking about potentially not building a wall.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's asked for all the parties to come in, and he's trying to negotiate something. He's looking for a compromise, which is part of the reason why we elected him. We want government to work, and you got to make compromises. The entire Constitution was one big compromise, as you know. So let's see how that plays out. But I don't think the president, really, Corey, is in a position right now to be able to say, okay, I'm just going to take no money. It doesn't matter. I think he's got to get something because I think his base is demanding it. I think a majority of Americans are demanding it. I mean, if you just look right now at Tijuana, the Border Patrol had to shoot tear gas in against people throwing rocks. But they were only able to do that and stop them because they had a physical barrier. They had a fence. You take that fence out, they're in. We got another 15,000 caravan forming now coming up because they think that eventually, look, the Trump administration will cave and we'll all be able to come in. How do you solve it?
Look, the only way to solve it is to have a physical barrier on the southern border. And, you know, the president has never wavered from this. Democrats said, you know, and voted not that many years ago for a wall on the southern border. But now they're playing politics. The American people are smart. They know that. And look, there will be repercussions on the 2020 election cycle if this does not get delivered to both Republicans and Democrats. Because to be fair, For 2 years, the Republicans also failed.
Totally. Well, we have to get this done. We're with Corey Lewandowski, former campaign manager for the Trump for President campaign. He engineered the nomination victory, the biggest upset in history. He's a senior advisor with the Great America Committee. More information, go to greatamericacommittee.com. That's Vice President Pence's Hard Money Political Action Committee donating to candidates. Also, Corey, the author of two New York Times bestsellers. Number one, Let Trump Be Trump. Number two, Trump's Enemies. I just got a text here from one of your readers, Denny, who said from Chesapeake, who says, look, Corey's book, I just finished it, is a must read when it comes to detailing the facts related to the Mueller witch hunt. You may wish to make this point while he is on. Best book out there, Trump's Enemies. So you got a fan.
Well, thank you, and thank you to your listeners, John. They've supported me, and the fact that Dave Bossy and I have made the New York Times bestsellers twice in the last year is really a very humbling thing for a local yokel from Lowell, Massachusetts, a very blue-collar guy. Never did I think I'd read a New York Times bestseller, let alone write two of them, but it's because of your listenership and the support that they have given to me and Dave and the president to tell a story that the American people need to know and the abuses that the Justice Department and the FBI perpetrated against this president and his staff members because they didn't like his politics should scare the heck out of every American, and we have to make sure it never happens again.
John Frederick's Radio Network, eight-year anniversary show with Corey Lewandowski. Corey, I want to get to Syria. You know what amazes me? At the beginning of the campaign, from the time the president came down the escalator right through the early debates, he said consistently, elect me president and I'm going to get the U.S. out of these foreign entanglements. Specifically, he said, Syria and Afghanistan. So after 2 years, he decides to follow through on a promise that was not hidden or like meant as an afterthought. It was a centerpiece of his campaign, right? So now he's doing it. And everybody's up in arms over saying, well, he didn't consult his advisors. Well, nobody elected Jim Mattis president. They elected Trump president. And this is exactly what the president said he was going to do. I don't know what the beef is.
John, it's very simple. We have had American troops in Afghanistan for almost 6,300 days, 17 years. We've lost thousands of American men and women over there who have fought for, you know, rebuilding a country that has been devastated for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to Syria, we've been in Syria for almost 8 years, if you can believe it. That was supposed to be a limited military exercise, that we were supposed to be there for 3 months. We've been there over 6 years now. And the issue is, right, there is no end in sight. And if you just want to listen to the generals, and I respect them, they love war, they love fighting, that's what they do. But when do we have an obligation to the family members of the men and women who are killed or maimed overseas, protecting an interest that isn't our interest, to say enough is enough? And if you want to listen, look, Lindsey Graham had lunch with the president, I think yesterday or the day before. He was on the Sunday shows, and he said, you know what, I disagree with the president on this. And then they went and they had a conversation. Lindsey said, I heard some things that the president told me that give me a better understanding of why we're taking our troops out. Now, he's not taking them out tomorrow, but there has to be a plan, because if you leave this to the military generals, they will leave those men and women in uniform over there in perpetuity, because mm-hmm. that's what they like to do. And this president said, we are no longer going to be the policemen of the world. We're going to bring our men and women home so they can be here with their families, and they will be deployed on specific missions. But we have to let other nations carry some of this burden, too.
Corey Lewandowski, final question. Mitt Romney fires the first salvo, 2019. I wake up today, January 2nd. He's got an op-ed in Wall Street Journal or somewhere, I forget where it is, that I read, blasting the president, his policies, his character. This is the same guy that drugged the Republican Party down to the feet, the Whig Party. This is the guy that represented the basically establishment elite, donor-based, gangster, bankster, Wall Street Republicans that you personally eviscerated in 2016. What's his deal?
Look, this guy, he's a sore winner. Don't forget, when he was running for the U.S. Senate in Utah 3 months ago, he was praising Donald Trump. I'm going to be a team player. He comes to Washington, D.C. He's going to be a thorn in the side of this president. He's still angry that he's not as rich as Donald Trump, that he's not as successful as Donald Trump, that he's never going to be the president of the United States, that Donald Trump got more votes than he did in the New Hampshire primary. When Donald Trump had 16 people running, Mitt Romney had 5, Trump still got more votes. Look, Mitt Romney wants to be relevant again. He's the junior U.S. senator from Utah. He will always be the junior senator from Utah. He wants to run for president. He wakes up every day saying, I could have been the president of the United States, except the fact that the more people that they that get to meet him, the less people that vote for him. And so this is about sour grapes, and this is him being the typical politician, being in Utah saying, I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. to support the president, and then coming to Washington, D.C., and the day before he's sworn in, writing an op-ed for the Washington Post saying that, you know, this president in the last month hasn't represented the office. Mitt, you'll be invited to the Oval Office, but you'll never occupy it.
We're going to end on that one, Corey. He'll be invited, but he'll never occupy it. I will see you this week. John Frederick's Radio Network, Truck and the Truth Across America, 8-year anniversary show. Corey Lewandowski, hey, buy his book, man. It is so great. You got to read it. It is the must read in 2018, now 19, Trump's Enemies. You can get it anywhere, Amazon, B. Dalton, your favorite bookstore. Just go to our website, johnfredericksradio.com, and it's right there. Just click on it and buy it. Corey, thanks for being with us. Let's get to our good friend, Sheriff David Clark. Sheriff Clark is a senior advisor for America First Policies and a big supporter of President Trump, former sheriff of Milwaukee. He is America's sheriff. Sheriff Clark, Happy New Year.
John, Happy New Year to you and your listeners, and congrats on your 8 years in the business.
Thank you. Thank you, Sheriff. I appreciate that. So, Sheriff, right out of the bat, first of all, I have to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Leslie, in Birmingham, Alabama, and her contingent of Trump train followers. And Leslie says, what about me in Alabama, my chopped liver? So thank you, for Leslie, for that. You've been a very loyal listener for a very long time, and we thank you and all of Trump Alabama Nation. So, Sheriff, like, it's, you know, New Year's, first day after New Year's, you're with your family, you get up today, and the first thing you hit with is an op-ed by Mitt Romney, who will be sworn in tomorrow as a U.S. senator from Utah, blasting President Trump and his policies. I mean, first day, right out of the box. What is up with these people?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate. It seems like Mitt Romney's going to be the next Jeff Flake or a Corker, Bob Corker, I think his name is. You know, and being a GOP member who's going to attack and poke at President of the United States. The president doesn't need people like this in the Senate or in Congress. He made it clear during the midterms. He said, I need more Republicans, but he said, I need more Republicans that are going to support his agenda. And it appears to me that Mitt Romney still has a chip on his shoulder over the way he was handled on the Secretary of State position. If you recall that, he was left dangling out there a long time. And, you know, here the guy was a former GOP nominee for President of the United States. And when he lost that, and he shouldn't have, he lost to a guy that had the worst numbers going into the election in Barack Obama, the worst economic numbers of any president in history. The presidents that have had those kind of economic numbers going into reelection have lost. And here Mitt Romney couldn't even beat Barack Obama under those circumstances. So he's going to be the next Jeff Flake.
Well, I think that's what he's positioning himself for. I mean, he couldn't even wait till he got sworn in to now take this mantle. And look, he's just part of the old Whig Republican set, the gangster bankster, Goldman Sachs, lower Manhattan funded group that couldn't win anything. So I want to get now to the border security, Sheriff Clark. Yesterday, the Border Patrol, under the supervision of Department of Homeland Security, has to tear gas migrants throwing rocks trying to breach the wall or the fence. Let me just ask you something straight up. If there was no fence there, would they have been able to stop any of these people from coming in?
No, not at all. And good for the Border Patrol down there for taking assertive action. Shouldn't have to put up with this crap from people who are trying to illegally force their way into the country. That is a violent act. This is what's going on at the border that's undercovered by the lying liberal media. They try to make it seem like it's just poor women and pregnant women and children trying to come in looking for a better life, looking to flee dangerous conditions from their country. No, most of these individuals are young males. They're people who are going to come into this country and do the same thing. We just had a California law enforcement officer killed in the line of duty, murdered in the line of duty by an illegal alien in Newman, California, a guy who came in the right way. Ronald Singh is his name, Officer Ronald Singh, immigrated from Fiji, came in the right way, became a U.S. citizen, and then went on to serve his community as a law enforcement officer, and he's killed by a guy illegally in the country. You know, I was looking up some data, John, and the number of illegal aliens committing crimes rose dramatically in 2017, and I'm talking about for, you know, some serious stuff. Because I don't know how they come up with this definition of what a violent crime is, because they don't consider burglary a violent crime. Burglary is a very violent crime. If you've ever been burglarized, you're traumatized. Plus, with most states now having a castle doctrine, you can shoot and kill an intruder who's illegally or unlawfully, I should say, in your house. So you look at nearly 60,000 illegal immigrants in 2017 were arrested for driving under the influence. That is a very serious crime. So you look at how we've watered that down as well. And this is what the problem is. This is what President Trump is trying to put the focus on, and we have to fix the system. Look, when you're in somebody's country, even if you're in there lawfully, you're a guest. And it's not too much to ask that you adhere to that country's laws. But when you're in the country illegally, I don't think that it's too much to ask that those people obey the laws, and that if you do even things like theft, larceny, assault, simple assault, you should be deported.
So I don't think there's any question here about the border security, the fence there in Tijuana going into San Diego, right? Without that, they would have just come over. So there's no question you need some kind of a barrier. I just don't get this argument that the Democrats are having. Now they're going to put forth a bill. They take over on the 3rd with no border security, with no wall money. The president's going to veto it. The president has invited them into compromise. What should the president's position be now, Sheriff Clark?
Well, his position should be just what it is. Just hold out. You know, like I said previously, the president is talking about policy. He's talking about border security, the safety and security of citizens in the United States. He's talking about U.S. sovereignty. That's an aspect of the United States Constitution. Whereas Schumer and Pelosi are talking about politics. They want to deny the president a campaign win. The president made it very clear during his campaign, he ran on it, that he's going to do everything he could to secure the United States to fix this broken illegal immigration system. So right now, the president's made it very clear, read an article not too long ago, this morning, where he said it's a non-starter. Don't send any bill up here that doesn't include border security, including funding for some sort of wall or barrier. But the Senate's made it clear, and I'm glad to hear Mitch McConnell say that they're not going to even work on anything from the House that doesn't include some sort of border security and funding for a wall. So it's a standoff right now, but the president's going to win. Look, this thing's been, I don't know, shut down, partial shut down for 10, 11 days now. Mm-hmm. Nobody's noticed anything, and nobody would notice anything. That's why I said that boogeyman doesn't scare anybody anymore, that the Democrats like to use against Republicans who run from it like it's the plague whenever they hear shutdown. And other than some non-essential federal employees. But you know what? Here's another thing, John. Think about this. We have more jobs in the United States than people to fill them. If we have so many non-essential federal employees, why don't we get rid of them and they can go into the private sector? I don't want anybody to lose their job and be out of work, but there's plenty of jobs out there now. These federal employees can go out and get a job in the private sector and find out how different it is out there when you're held accountable. You can be fired for underproduction, all these things that can't happen when you're a federal employee. So there's other aspects to this shutdown as well that would benefit the American people.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, the point that you bring up, Sheriff Clark, is it's been 10, 11 days. The sky's not fallen. The end of the world is not upon us. Nothing has happened. I mean, there's some garbage cans that are overflowing, and the West is the only thing I've heard about it. So what we've been saying for 2 weeks is these are not people that are not going to get paid, right? So they're basically staying home now. It's a paid vacation because at some point in time, the government will reopen. And if it's been 2 months on the first paycheck, they'll get that week they're owed plus 2 months. So all
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. The killing of 7-year-old Jasmine Barnes appears to have been a case of mistaken identity, not a racially motivated attack, as her family feared. Authorities say that they have identified two suspects and that both are African-American. One, 20-year-old Eric Black Jr., is in custody and has been charged with capital murder. President Trump standing by his demands for funding a border wall for a border wall as another round of shutdown talks fails to break an impasse. Newly empowered House Democrats are planning to step up the pressure on President Trump and Republican lawmakers to reopen the government. The president spent part of Sunday at Camp David for staff meetings, but showed no signs of budging on his demand for a $5.6 billion for a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. Nick Foles hit Golden Tate for a touchdown pass. The Eagles get a victory over the Bears 16-15. This is SRN News.
Pat Boone here again, and I assure you, I have never before endorsed a pain relief product. Not until now. Not until Relief Factor came along as a 100% drug-free solution for people struggling with ordinary pain. Quite simply, Relief Factor was designed by doctors to help relieve those occasional aches and pains due to aging, exercise, and everyday living. Let me ask you, are aches and pains keeping you from sleeping through the night? Or keeping you from taking those nice long walks or playing golf or tennis? You can't really call it living if you can't get around comfortably. The 3-week quick start from Relief Factor may be all you need to lower or even eliminate these pains. A whole lot of people have already gone to ReliefFactor.com, and here's something you need to know. The majority of people who order the 3-week quick start, now only $19.95, go on to order more. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special, plus free shipping. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-950-9024 and use promo code WBOB. That's 50% off plus free shipping. Don't delay. Order now.
Ramona Flea Market has stuff, new stuff, used stuff, fun stuff, kid stuff, stuff to put stuff in, stuff to build stuff with. And who needs all that stuff? You. And what do you do when you have too much stuff? Sell your stuff at Ramona Flea Market. Open every Saturday and Sunday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Book your space now. Call 904-786-3532. Ramona Flea Market, Ramona Boulevard near I-10 and 295. It's I'm Speaking Plainly with Bill Hay.
What you got to say?
Join Bill Hay every Saturday night at 6. Bill will be taking your calls on Jacksonville's only weekend political talk show. Call Bill at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Your opinion counts, so call in and talk to Bill. I'm Speaking Plainly with Bill Hay, only on 600 WBOB.
Joining us now, live from the White House, Deputy Press Secretary Hogan Gidley. Hogan, great to have you with us, man.
Thanks so much for the time. Welcome to the swamp.
Hogan, I know, right, a couple days out now. You guys have to spend your holidays there, hold up. I at least got to get the hell out of town. You didn't have that luxury, Hogan. You're still there negotiating. Now, the president's having another meeting today, trying to bring these sides together, get a compromise. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I was happy to welcome Nancy Pelosi back to Washington after her Hawaiian vacation. I will say she looked very tan, very rested, maybe had a few hula lessons down there. We'll never know. But we were all here working, trying to get some solutions and some things done for the American people. The president and the vice president were here, and it kind of culminated yesterday, quite frankly, in an invitation from the president to the Big Eight leadership in both the House and the Senate, Republican and Democrat, to come sit down and hear a briefing from Secretary Nielsen about the crisis at our border. I'm here to tell you, being in that meeting in the Situation Room, the most important room, quite frankly, on the globe,
right?
I watched as the President of the United States turned the meeting over to Secretary Nielsen, who was on the border, so it was a live video feed, and within 5 seconds of the presentation about the crisis on the border, the new numbers that have come in that are showing this to be one of the most dangerous situations we've ever faced, Nancy Pelosi, at Chuck Schumer's prodding, shut down the Secretary of Homeland Security, Secretary Nielsen, and would not let her complete a sentence, and went on. Nancy Pelosi then continued to go on some type of prepared show, prepared remarks that she and Chuck Schumer played off of each other, just like they did in the Oval Office a couple of weeks ago, refused to listen to the data. Mm-hmm. And when a tidbit or two did come out showing how dangerous the situation is and just the kind of crisis we face from a national security standpoint and humanitarian standpoint, Nancy Pelosi didn't know the stat, didn't believe the stat, and didn't care about the stat. It blew my mind to watch this go on. And one more thing I need to say, mm-hmm. when you put all that up against the backdrop, Nancy Pelosi's behavior in that meeting, and it wasn't just rude or ignorant, it was dismissive, it was in disbelief of what she was hearing. You put all that up against the backdrop, in her home state of California, where an officer of the law, a legal immigrant, was just shot and killed by an illegal immigrant.
Right.
Put in the ground the very same day, and Nancy Pelosi hasn't tweeted anything about condolences for the family, hasn't acknowledged the deadly situation that existed and the reality that that poor family faces moving into the new year. And here she is at the White House completely ignoring the statistical information and data that shows how dangerous this situation is.
Let me ask you something, Hogan Gidley, Deputy Press Secretary, White House, President Trump. So Pelosi, you're saying, showed absolutely no interest in any of the facts, any of the figures, any of the information that our Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security was presenting. She had no interest in any of the information.
It was a disdain for it. It was a disregard for it. She accused the Secretary of lying, like it wasn't true statistical data. And had she been coming to this building with her with fulfilling her duty to protect the American people in mind, what she would have heard is that Customs Border Protection arrested 17,000 convicted criminals trying to get into this country last year, almost 4,000 known or suspected terrorists coming into this country last year, thousands of gang members, including MS-13, arrested coming into this country last year. She refuses to acknowledge that stat. And if you go to the humanitarian side, just try to wrap your head around this for a minute. We're going to see 100,000 children attempt to come into this country illegally from human traffickers, child smugglers, coyotes who bring across children. It's a 25% increase. We're going to see 100,000 by the first quarter. Those are record numbers. Family units coming to this country, 161,000, 50% more than the previous year. I am telling you, what the Democrats are offering are status quo solutions to critical mass problems. They're offering old funding numbers for a situation that, quite frankly, it didn't help before. And you know they're not serious for a couple of reasons. One is, serious people with serious plans don't negotiate in the press. That's what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. But second is, if you take a look at what Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats put forward as their plan to fund the government, mm-hmm. it may open the government, but it doesn't protect the American people. In fact, it has more funding in their bill going to foreign countries for aid than it does to protect the American people in a border security package. That should tell you all you need to know. In fact, it's twice as much going to foreign countries than it is to protect our people.
You've asked for $5.7 billion. You got that from the House of Representatives. Over $10 billion, and two times that has already been appropriated to Mexico, Guatemala, South America. You know, I get it. Invest in their situations, create jobs so that there's not an incentive to come to the United States. I don't begrudge the $10 billion, but the fact that they won't even compromise on this, Hogan, is what I think is bothering a lot of people. And they're saying the president is being obstinate. I mean, they basically said it's my way or the highway, right?
Well, they did, but let me unpack that for just a second.
Go ahead.
Through the president's negotiation style and Secretary Nielsen, we worked out a deal with Mexico that now asylees or people who claim asylum coming to the country, which, by the way, has gone up – the credible fear claim has gone up 1,700% in the last 8 years, okay, because they know it's a loophole to try and get in this country. We've negotiated a deal with Mexico. The government now says when they come through our country – and try to get into yours, America, we will hold them in our country until their trial can be adjudicated in the United States. That's going to save us billions of dollars. And in fact, what that now says is that the government of Mexico is now doing more to protect the American people than our Democrats. They are working to solve our immigration crisis, the government of Mexico now, more than the Democrat Party. That should tell you all you need to know. And right now, what we have, and you'll remember that famous meeting in the Oval Office where Nancy Pelosi said, the American people this, the American people that. Mm-hmm. She said that, but her policies don't do anything to protect the American people, number one. Number two, she also said, Mr. President, you don't have the votes in the House. You don't have anything that can pass. The president said, I can do it in 2 seconds. Nancy Pelosi said, no, you don't. Next thing you know, the meeting adjourns. He calls the people over from the House. They go right back to the floor and vote out a package with $5.6 billion of funding. It goes right through. Now it's squarely in the hands of the Senate. So once again, a year ago we were in the same place with the Schumer shutdown. Eight Democrats or nine Democrats have to come on board and decide whether they're going to let their hatred for this president surpass their love of the country. And it seems right now these same Democrats, Schumer, Clinton, Obama, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, all voted for fencing, all voted for a wall, all voted for a border security package that's much bigger than the one that President Trump is asking for. A couple of things have happened since that vote back in 2006 and in 2013. One of those is that the problem has gotten much, much worse. Two is the political calculus has completely changed. Now they think everyone who comes here is going to vote for them, and all they want is power, so they're going to try and let them in this country illegally so they can have their vote forever. And three is, and this is probably the most telling from their political mindset, Donald Trump's in the White House. Those are the three differences. And they've taken those differences and said, you know what, what they are doing extensively is standing with hundreds of thousands of people who come to this country every year illegally and unlawfully, as opposed to standing with hundreds of millions of American citizens.
It's an incredible position to take right now and not to be able to compromise at all. Like the president has said, let's meet. Let's try to get this worked out. Let me just ask you something, Hogan Gidley. We're with Hogan Gidley. He is the deputy press secretary at the White House for President Trump. Hogan, let me just ask you one question for our audience. The $5.6 billion package for the wall that was already passed by the Republican House in December, is that still stand, or is that going to get just overturned today when Nancy Pelosi takes over as speaker, assuming she has the votes?
I'm sorry, the question, does what still stand?
The $5.6 billion package, the spending package coming out of the House in December, does that still stand, or is that just done today?
I'm fairly certain procedurally that resets from what I understand. But the president's been clear about where he stands,
right?
And he hasn't reset. We need enough money to secure the border, and I'll tell you, the president's package, it opens the government, it funds the government, and it protects the American people. Their package opens the government, funds the government, but does nothing to protect the American people. Now, I will say, President Trump's immigration policy is based largely on, which includes a wall, is based largely on what Customs Border Protection, ICE, DHS, all say they need to protect the people.
Right.
Every one of those agencies put forth numbers and information. Here's what we need. And as I said before, the status quo solutions aren't working anymore. So there's a 25% increase of unaccompanied children coming across that dangerous journey, 50% more in family units, a 2,000% increase in asylum claims.
Right.
This is a flood of people coming in, and your listeners saw this in that graphic video around New Year's Eve when they were trying to storm the wall and come over the wall.
Right.
The very little secret here is walls work. Whether it's Israel, whether it's Yuma, Arizona, whether it's Tucson, when you put up a wall, border crossings drop anywhere from 95 to 99%. That's almost a complete cessation of illegal border crossings in those areas. They know walls work. That's why, as the president pointed out so articulately, that's why Barack Obama put a wall around his house
That's
in
right.
D.C., mm-hmm. because he knows it works to keep people out. He knows it deters people from trying to come into his house. He knows that. The fact that now they don't want everyday Americans to have the same solutions that they are afforded is hypocrisy at the highest level.
Well, there's the elites in the swamp right there. What's good enough for them is not good enough for everybody else. But look, Hogan Gidley, you nailed it. The real issue here is not supporting the president on something that is in the best interest of the American people. And it's about opposing the president to appease their base. And as you said, Democrats want cheap votes. They get them in. They get some sort of a benefit, government benefit somewhere. They were the ones that allowed them to come in illegally. And then they turn them into Democratic voters in perpetuity. So everybody knows how they're gaming the system. And then you look at asylum changes that the president attempted to make, which was shot down by the Ninth Circuit the other day. And the Mexico government has allowed and provided 4,000 work visas for the caravan that's in Tijuana right now. 4,000 work visas for 1 year to stay and work in Mexico. That means if they were fleeing something bad, then they could stay in Mexico, get a work visa, right? Work, live, prosper. You know that of the 4,000 that President AMLO offered, only 190 have applied. What does that tell you right there?
Here's what it tells you what the statistics bear out. 90% of those who come to this country who are claiming asylum from a credible fear, meaning that they're being persecuted, there's a 6-point checklist that they're asked in court. 90% of those claiming credible fear from their governments, 90% are rejected and say, no, that's a fake claim.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a majority of the people, I think 75% of the migrants in these caravans are saying they're coming here for better economic opportunity,
mm-hmm.
right? So theoretically, once you cross the border of a country that you claim is oppressing you or targeting you or committing acts of violence for religious persecution and various reasons to come in, once you cross into a country that's a safe haven, you should immediately go to that government and apply for asylum, take Mexico up on its generous offer to live and work there and not be persecuted by the government. Instead, they're asylum shopping trying to come to this country. Now, it should be noted, Donald Trump made this point. The President of the United States made this point. We want immigrants in this country. We are a nation of immigrants, but we want them to come in the legal way. And to pretend as though we are some harsh nation as it relates to immigrants is preposterous on its face. We allow 1.1 million people a year to become citizens of this country from other nations.
Right.
We allow 500,000 work visas, 500,000 student visas every year. So to pretend as though this is some type of nation that is cold and heartless to those who want to come here is absolute and utter nonsense. What we have to do is close the loopholes, build a wall. At the very least, the wall funnels people to ports of entry where
right.
the government can then see those people, because what they're doing is they're taking these women and children up through dangerous, perilous journeys. In the caravans, 30% of women claim rape. They say they're raped on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
70% claim some form of assault on mm-hmm. the way up, mm-hmm. and they're not bringing them to ports of entry. 85% of crossings occur in between ports of entry because the coyotes understand, the drug smugglers understand, the human traffickers understand, if we can just get them across the border, what they're selling to their people at home, we can get you across the border, you'll be a citizen in no time. We'll take care of that. So the incentive is there for them not only to break the law, but to put extreme dangers, extreme perils onto unsuspecting people who just want a better life. We understand they want a better life, but there is a way to do it the right way that protects them, mm-hmm. and quite frankly, it's better for this country.
Well, look, going through the legal means, which is applying for asylum in the U.S. ports of entry, I mean, that is the way the law is written. What we have now is, though, as soon as you put a foot over the border, or though you're breaking one law, you're then protected by other laws as soon as you put that foot over. And so there is an abuse of the asylum system, and it should be preserved and protected for those that legitimately qualify. As you said, Hogan Gidley, 90% of those that are seeking asylum, those claims, when investigated, are rejected. And simply a better economic opportunity is not the reason to claim asylum. Look, there's 7 billion people in the world, Hogan, that would rather live in the United States because there's a better opportunity for them. We can't absorb the entire world. So these laws make sense. But isn't it ironic that the new president of Mexico, AMLO, isn't it ironic that is the president of Mexico that has done more to try to solve the situation with the migrants and the caravan as it relates to illegally coming into the United States than our own government? How does that make sense?
It's unbelievable. And I will point out, one of the reasons people don't really understand the crisis mm-hmm. is because for decades this has been a growing problem that mm-hmm. few people actually knew about. And one of the reasons why is because the data isn't available.
Right.
This president came in and said, I want the data from my agencies that tell me who's coming into this country, how they're getting here, why they're coming here, and I want raw data and numbers, because data drives policy.
Mm-hmm.
And we found it's been virtually impossible to get numbers from these agencies because either A, previous administrations basically hid the numbers, or B, they didn't want them compiled in the first place.
Right.
So you can't just update a number each year. It didn't exist. You had to go back and find the data and create these tables because nobody else really wanted to fix the problem. This president came in and said, nope, we're fixing the problem. Give me the data. The agency says, we don't have the data, and he says, find it. I want the data. And so now we're coming to a point in this administration where we have kind of gone on a fact-finding and also information-sharing campaign
right.
for the American people to just see what's going on here, so that when you hear claims that all is fine on the border, right, that there are no issues on the border, that this crisis is manufactured. There is no caravan, Mr. President, one of the reporters famously said. They aren't going to try and storm the border, Mr. President, as one of the reporters famously said. Then, lo and behold, they show up at the border, and what do they try to do? They come running across the border, running through the little water area there, up the other side, trying to climb the fence. We all now see the video that what the president has been saying, what the president has been warning about, is 100% true. And I will say this. Think about, as I started this interview with Nancy Pelosi and the death that occurred in California, all of the issues that we face, mm-hmm. these deaths are mm-hmm. needless and they are senseless.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what else. They are 100% preventable.
Right.
All we have to do is close these loopholes. They won't come to this country, and those lives will be saved. And that's what the president wants to do.
Hogan Gidley, we're out of time. I want to thank you for that great update, super analysis. Hogan Gidley, the deputy press secretary at the White House to President Trump, thanks for joining us. It was great to have you on and get your insight and perspective. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the time. Y'all have a great day.
All right, Hogan Gidley there at the White House joining us here on the John Fredericks Radio Network, and quite the analysis we just got. You can't ask for anything else. Best radio in America right here, John Fredericks Radio Network. It's now Charlie Wiley. Charlie Wiley and I go back to, oh my goodness, I'm 60. By the way, this is the 8th year anniversary week of the John Fredericks Radio Network. I want to thank all of our loyal listeners and our sponsors and advertisers, many of whom have been with me for 8 years, 8-year anniversary show week. And Charlie Wiley and I go back. I'm 60. I first met Charlie when I was in college. I was like 19, and he was running for – I was 18. He was running for Congress. How many years ago was that? 42 years ago, I met Charlie. He was running for Congress in New Jersey as a Republican against Ed Patton. I remember this stuff. I don't know. And I met him. He made a little speech at my doctor's house, actually, the guy that did my appendectomy when I was 18. And that's where I met him. I fell in love with this guy. I'm like, wow, this guy is like, he could be president one day. I was so impressed with him. And He has been all over the place. He worked with AIM for a long time, and he ran again in Congress in 1978, and lost by like 100 votes. Had he won that election, I predicted he would have been president. And I'll stand by that. He's 92. He's a 92-year-old veteran of the Second World War. He's got an 87-year career, starting as a child actor. He's a journalist. He's a lecturer. And he's been all over the world five times to Wednesday. And he also covered the Vietnam War and was there in the Tet Offensive. So, guys, I think it's again suffice to say he's been around the block a little bit. But the thing about Charlie, he's 92, but he's still talking in college campuses and connecting with millennials. So I want to know what they're thinking, and that's why we have him on live from Los Angeles. Charlie Wiley, been too long, man. Great to have you.
It's great to be here, and there's some hope for the kids out there. If you talk to them and in a way that they will pick up, I have no problem. I go every year since 1991. I have been annually. Every year I go to UC Berkeley and I taught to 700 students.
To Berkeley?
At UC Berkeley. And I never have a problem. And that doesn't mean that I'm saying things that are making them happy. I am sure they disagree with most of what I say. But I never have any problem, and I find that across the country I can reach kids, and I reach them at schools everywhere. One of the things that you do, you have to make it absolutely clear you're not going to BS to them. So many of the speakers kind of speak down, and they just don't contact with them, and that's basically what it's all about. If you go out there and you talk straight, you tell them exactly what you mean. But you make sure that you recognize that there are differences. For example, I always tell them that there is no way in hell that anybody can sensibly generalize about millennials, because there's a couple hundred million millennials in the world today. I mean, so how can you generalize?
Right.
And so what I make clear is that any attacks that I make on the behavior of millennials is aimed at those millennials that have self-identified as active political millennials with a certain the ones that we sometimes call snowflakes. They want safe places. They don't want to listen to anybody from the other side and so on. And so I always make it clear I'm not talking about the rest of you. I'm talking about them. And then I always point out, for example, that I have a lot in common with those millennials, and they want safe places. And I understand that. They don't want to hear words that are going to upset them. They don't want to see something written on the side. Maybe somebody has put on the chalk, vote for, on the sidewalk with chalk, vote for Trump. And then those are, you know, I can understand. They want to escape from terrible things like that. And what I've got in common is when I was their age, I felt the same way. In fact, the guys I was with, we all pretty much felt that same way. We wanted a safe place. Now, what they do is they go to some college administrator that gives them some place they can all go hide. Unfortunately, the people I was with, we couldn't find anybody like that. I was at a little island called Okinawa. I was on an LST, an amphibious ship. Boy, did we want a safe place. Good Lord, there were people flying all around us that were trying to kill us.